and welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sider. I'm joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. And also, you can follow us our Locked On Twitter page on Locked On Suns at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. We're going to talk about today on trade deadline special. Nothing else to really talk about. There's no Suns game today, so the trade deadline actually happened. And I know you guys were really looking forward to a Suns trade happening after the Tyler Johnson one, but surprisingly, to our surprise as well, I think no move was made, which was really – what was your reaction to that, Brent, first off? Because that's our first segment, and we're also going to hit on what other deals around the league and how it affects the Suns, and maybe looking ahead to the summer and seeing what now with Tyler Johnson's contract they can do with it. So, Brendan, your reaction to the Suns being quiet today, because I heard on James Jones and Burns and Gambo pretty much say that they didn't take any calls in the last 24 to 48 hours, that Tyler Johnson is pretty much the only move they're going to make.
Yeah, it's a little puzzling, I think, to be honest. I think that's what we'll get into a little bit more here in this segment about why I think it happened. But overall, I feel like it just seems like there was more going on, more that could have been done. But once the Suns used that Ryan Anderson contract to, you know, turn that into Tyler Johnson, it didn't necessarily make a ton of sense to do anything else. I guess that was kind of their best trade chip as far as, you know, just minimal trade deadline type of deal. But just because we've heard so many rumors from so many different angles at this point, I guess that's just how trade deadline season works. And maybe I was overreacting to that, but I would say overall, I did expect them to do at least something small today. But that being said, I mean, excited to see how the Tyler Johnson thing turns out. And I think the biggest asset they could have used to upgrade the team into the future would have been Josh Jackson. And he's been playing so well that I'm excited to see how that goes too. So all in all, I don't think they failed by any means to not make a deal, but I was surprised.
We should mention also, according to Arizona Central's, AZ Central's Dwayne Rakin, he said in a report yesterday in Utah that TJ Warren and Josh Jackson weren't available in trade talks. So were you surprised?
Yeah, we should talk about that really quick. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because I just pulled that article up while I was talking because I wanted to bring it up too. And this is nothing against Dwayne. Like, let's get that out of the way first. He's a good reporter. He's done an awesome job covering the team. It's not anything about whether we believe that he heard that or not. It's not that. It's just, I think that whoever in the Suns organization did that, it definitely feels like posturing. You know, he told the radio the same thing, like you just said. That's fine. I don't believe that they were not listening on any of those players. That would just be kind of silly to me. And it really makes no sense. I mean, TJ Warren is shaping up into one of the better contracts in the league if he continues to even play at this level, let alone improve a little bit more as he enters his prime. So that wouldn't make a ton of sense, despite his even knowing that he's injured right now. Josh Jackson, of course, we talked about yesterday how inconsistent he is. So expecting him to keep this up and turn into an asset would be a little bit silly after a few games, a few weeks of good play. So overall, I don't necessarily buy it. It's also in direct contrast to what Tanya Ganguly of the LA Times reported, that the Suns had reached out to the Lakers to potentially be a third team. So I just feel like we've heard so much on the contrary that it doesn't really add up to me that the Suns were not listening or involved in anything we've heard them be rumored involved in over the past month or so.
I'm right there with you as well. Nothing against Dwayne, but I'm right there with you about the posturing angle. And it makes sense from their point of view, if just to try to say, like, maybe there was a deal they were trying to get in, maybe the Anthony Davis thing, for example, that never materialized after Monday. So really, maybe in the last 24 to 48 hours, there haven't been talks, because Ramona Shelburne and Brian Winterstein, ESPN today, said that they didn't really talk since Monday. So that those talks to Anthony Davis died pretty much, and that's when the Lonzo Ball talks probably died as well. So thinking more about that, Brendan, just thinking, I'm trying to think just the possibility of what could happen with the team, because like you said, TJ Warren has a great contract. Tyler Johnson now is an expiring. But from this point of view, as far as this season, I wanted to hit on Troy Daniels, because I don't know why he wasn't moved. I think when you see contracts like Reggie Bullock get moved for a second round pick and a young prospect, Wayne Ellington, I think, could have been moved as well. He got bought out after the deadline. Maybe they were trying to move Wayne, but who knows on that. But what do you think about Troy Daniels and the possibility of him getting bought out? Because I think he's a guy, if he does hit the buyout market, Brendan, that he's going to be one of the more softer guys.
Yeah, I do think maybe he could be bought out. Kind of feel like maybe we would have heard about it by now. But at the same time, I mean, we're still 3 weeks away. Buyouts don't need to be – teams don't need to sign with their new team until March 1st to be still playoff eligible. So maybe while the Suns figure out some of the rest of what they want to do. What?
Robin Lopez is also – I mean, he's going to get bought out soon by Chicago, we all think. So, I mean, if he hasn't hit the buyout market yet, Troy obviously still has a chance.
Yeah, it still could happen. But what I was going to say is I just think actually looking today at kind of how things shaped up, that we didn't see a lot of those deals where kind of role players, specialty types of guys got moved for an asset. That really didn't happen today at all. I mean, most of the deals we saw were either big deals where guys were being moved to upgrade a roster. We saw a lot of salary dumps, and we saw a lot of kind of reshuffling of salaries. That's like the Avery Bradley deal is an example of that, or the Harrison Barnes deal. We didn't see the type of thing we were expecting when it comes to Daniels for a spare part. There really was no trade like that. So, you know, maybe the reality is that market should have coalesced, but teams are just looking to the buyouts. And in that context, teams have all the leverage because they can just wait. You know, they can wait not only for a Wayne Ellington or a Troy Daniels, but whoever the next guy is that fits that bill, whether that's Wes Matthews or whoever. There's going to be another guy available, so teams don't have to panic, give up an asset for a bit player, which, in, you know, even knowing how good of a shooter Troy Daniels is, he's not going to be a game changer in a playoff series. So maybe it's just a matter of teams getting kind of smarter and not being willing to give up so much, especially with so many teams trying to avoid spending more. That was their priority over acquiring a 10 or 15 minute a game guy. So the Bullock thing, I think, is interesting because he's a little bit younger. So he's, 27. I mean, that's about the same age as Troy Daniels now that I think about it, but younger than Wayne Ellington and still, you know, kind of in the early stages of getting real time in the NBA. So maybe the thought is he could get a little bit better. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe the Lakers just overpaid. Maybe they didn't need to do that and they just chose to anyway. So just the fact that there wasn't anything that actually proves that there was a market for Daniels or Ellington makes me feel a little bit better that the Suns weren't able to get that done. But all things considered, I still feel like they could have pressed a little harder on that Ellington deal in the first place.
Yeah, the more I think about it, I mean, if the Lakers probably overpaid because they gave Michael Beasley almost a $5 million contract this summer when really he could have gone for the veteran minimum. So I think maybe that might be more of a Lakers thing than most. Yeah. But what do you think, just looking ahead here to the overall picture of this roster now, Brendan? We have Tyler Johnson expiring, like I was saying. We have TJ Warren's contract, which if he plays like this, will be one like a Robert Covington-esque contract, maybe not on the same level as Roko, but maybe a tier below that. Kelly Oubre can turn to that once he signs an offer sheet. The Suns want to keep him as well. There's a lot of assets on this team, Brendan. It seems like with them not making a move today, they're going, putting their chips in on all in on the summer, because I think you really, if you're setting Pat this summer, Brendan, you're really going to, I think you're getting a little worried here if you're about Devin Booker's future.
Yeah, I don't think this necessarily shows me that they're, I don't know if it really showed me their hand in any way, one way or the other, when it comes to the summer. I mean, we can get into that here in our next segment a little bit too, is kind of what we envision as their plans. But just thinking about today specifically, I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, because I think the only expectations I had were maybe to cash in on Warren and get a couple assets in return, or, you know, use Troy Daniels or Jamal Crawford. I really don't think there was a deal out there for Jamal Crawford, but something like that, an expiring contract to get something back would have been the only type of thing. So the fact that they didn't do that doesn't necessarily mean that I think their summer plans are any different than I thought going in.
Yeah, that's true. Before we go into our second segment, guys, I want to tell you really quickly about our Locked On NBA Network. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On NBA Net. I think it's one of our valuable resources out there. We have all 30 accounts, all 30 teams really on a tight scope every day by all of us. You guys know about Burn 9 in Phoenix. We also have David Locke in Utah. We also have John Corrales in Boston, just to name a few. We have all 30 teams covered all on one account as well. So you don't have to worry about following everyone if you don't want to do that. but you really should, because we have one of the more valuable, really also credentialed as well, which is really awesome to see. So if you're not already doing so, give us a follow at Locked On NBA to help support and grow the network.
I want to also tell you guys about Homie. It's the awesome new sponsor that you've been hearing about here for a while, and they are really changing the game when it comes to the real estate market here in Phoenix. They're a completely different type of company than anything you've seen before, because they're not trying to make a ton of money on you. They're trying to save the money for you. Of course, they have a team of realtors. They have a team of lawyers to help you, and they're going to be there every step of the way. But the point of the business is not to buy up a house and resell it at a profit. The point is to give you that support, find a good deal for you, and help you every step of the way. So Homie sells homes for just $199 to list and $1,299 at close. That means that on average, Homie customers are saving over $10,000 and qualify for up to a $5,000 buyer refund, and the team can help you find a loan. So it's all really about that extra couple dollars here and there that really add up when you think about how many needless fees and hassles can go into buying or selling a home most of the time. What we're going to do here at Locked On Suns is make it a little bit better. So we're going to get you an extra $100 off that listing fee to make it just $99 when you list your house at Homie. To learn more about my friends at Homie, text Homie, that's H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Again, that is Homie, H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Alrighty, guys, let's move on here. Talk a little bit more about the summer, what the Suns might be thinking here. John Gambadoro yesterday made it pretty clear that his expectation and what he's sort of hearing from the team is that they view that Johnson contract as something that could potentially be added up with another few players to go and get that superstar. Probably not Anthony Davis, but as we've seen here, it's every few months at this point that an NBA star is concerned and doesn't want to play for their team anymore. So they kind of see it as a way to cash in eventually when that does happen. And Evan, how do you see that? Do you feel like that's realistic? Do you feel like Johnson's contract is any more useful in that regard than Ryan Anderson's would have been?
Maybe so. I think he's just more of a quality player. I think there's a really good possibility this could be Ryan Anderson's last year in the league with how he really showed himself in the first month of the season. I don't think anyone's really going to sign him to a contract. He'll get $15 million, get waived by Miami. So I think this could be his last year in the NBA, like I said. But Tyler Johnson is a productive player. I mean, on $19 million next year, it's not too bad. I mean, if you're looking at a tier below a superstar, LeBron, like a point guard, someone like a Drew Holiday, a Kyle Lowry, for example, I think those are two names you should keep an eye on, because I think Johnson's salary matches up pretty well if you use one of those wings alongside Johnson. That's maybe how they're thinking of how they could solve their point guard issues.
Yeah, potentially. I think this summer will obviously show a lot about kind of what they're thinking overall and where they want to go, but it does make them a little bit more flexible. The one thing I would mention that I wasn't on my mind yesterday when we were reacting here on the pod was just that Anderson salary going down to 15.6 is only if they had cut him. So it is a little bit different where if they had decided to keep Anderson, then he would have been a bigger salary. So I don't necessarily buy that this makes them more flexible just from a pure financial standpoint, because you know, if they want to use a big number there at 19.2 to go get a max type of player, then they had a better chance to do that by just keeping Anderson. I think that trade, the Johnson, was really about valuing Johnson. Like you're saying, he's a better player. He's somebody who, even if they ultimately want to deal him, he's going to be able to get on the court, make the team better, and fix at least some of the playmaking problems that they've had. So I think it was definitely more about that. And I think the thing we talked about yesterday when it comes to, I think the new regime in the front office, the new group there has a little bit of a different idea about how they'd like to use that, how they would have liked to use that contract rather than stretching it. They wanted to upgrade that spot on the roster. So just, I guess, do you think that this necessarily precludes them from going out and trying to sign a free agent this summer at point guard? Because we should mention Tyler Johnson is starting tomorrow against the Golden State Warriors in Phoenix. So we'll be there to catch that one, but he is going to be a big part of this team's plans right away. Do you think maybe they divert some resources to maybe a power forward, a bigger forward, or somewhere else on the roster, and use Johnson kind of for the foreseeable future?
Let me counter that, because I feel like it all kind of depends on the lottery, don't you think? Because if the Suns do get the number one pick at this point, the power forward issue is solved with Zion Williamson. That's the easiest number one pick, I think, in the last 5-6 years. But if they get number two, that's Ja Morant or RJ Barrett, number three, vice versa, with the same two guys. So I think if they land one of those top three picks, I think that kind of decides what direction they go. Because if they don't get Zion, I think that there's more possibility that they trade for a power forward, say, like Aaron Gordon, with Tyler Johnson's expiring contract, so to say.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that does make sense to me. My next question then would be, do you think Johnson, is he the type of player? I don't necessarily think I think so, but he's obviously just so much of an upgrade over somebody like Elia Kobo or even Jamal Crawford, that one thought that crossed my mind today, just kind of rethinking about the deal and now that they didn't do anything else, like, do you feel like Johnson might be worth a couple wins for this team and hurt their lottery position? Because those top four teams right now, New York, Cleveland, Chicago, and Phoenix, are all neck and neck, and a couple wins here or there with a guy like Johnson being such an upgrade could really be the difference between Zion and you know, Cam Reddish or Jarrett Culver.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I feel like Tyler Johnson really won't impact them that much, because he's kind of on the – if you had to say he's a starting point guard, Brent, wouldn't you say he's on the lower tier anyways?
Sure. I mean, even the Heat, who valued him enough to match that contract, only were playing him as their lead playmaker because of all the injuries to Dragic and a few other guys. So I don't think he's a good fit as your traditional primary playmaker, but I just feel like he's so much better than Okobo, and he's honestly a pretty good step up from even Crawford's top game here at age 38. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like he could win them a couple games.
Yeah, he's a guy. I'm looking at his numbers here with his starts. He's averaging around 12, 13 points per game when he does start, 3 to 4 assists per game. So, yeah, I mean, the point guard position, it'd be nice to get some production like that out of Okobo or Melton, but that's rare we see that. And also Jamal Crawford on a rare night as well. He'll drop the 15 or on some nights we saw in San Antonio, 20, 22 points. But, yeah, this is a big upgrade, Brian. I'm kind of going back to the Elfrid Payton deal of last year too, and I think – if you want to go back even further than that, I feel like this is even an upgrade over Elfrid Payton.
It is, exactly. And I mean, that didn't end up mattering too much. So maybe it is an overreaction to think that a talent upgrade is necessarily going to be the difference. But it is worth wondering. I mean, the Bulls also got Otto Porter. Maybe you see somewhat of a similar impact there. Probably same kind of thing where Porter's not good enough to do that on his own, but you see it maybe the upgrade at that position from one guy to the next, and maybe that's Chicago as well looking at a little bit of a better team this year. So I don't know, just an interesting kind of thing to think about as we do head toward the lottery, because obviously Zion is such a clear prize of this draft that's what everybody's aiming toward. But are there any other angles you feel like as far as kind of looking into June and July from what the Suns did or didn't do today?
Not really. I think this is kind of all depends on the lottery now at this point. It's just like last year. I mean, I think with that last roster spot, by the way, the Suns do have an open roster spot now. So we should hit on that really quickly and think about what they could do with that, because maybe at this point, just Juwan Evans being signed to a 3-month contract for 1-year deal.
Let's sign Daniel House.
Hey, I like that idea, actually.
Well, he's on a two-way. He's already signed, but it would be nice.
But are you worried that this could be going down the road here of last year, where we saw like the Josh Grays, the Shaq Harrisons? We see like a lot of G League guys to finish out the last few months of the season just on 10 days.
Sure, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because last year there was still a pretty big hole at playmaker. So if you think Johnson's there now starting, I think D'Anthony Melton will probably get his starting spot back. If not, then he'll play just as big a role off the bench, playing a ton of minutes. So, and Okobo sparing, you know, splitting time there too. So I think it's not too big of a problem. I think whoever's signed to that spot will be pretty inconsequential. I would rather them take a chance. I don't want to see I think Quincy Acey was a little bit of a desperation attempt at that point because of the injuries to Holmes and Ayton and Anderson not being able to play. But I think they should be trying to find guys who are lighting it up in the G League. You know, teams can turn those 10 days into legitimate players. I mean, Daniel House himself was on a few 10 days before he got to the Suns and then the Warriors, now the Rockets, and turned himself into a good player. So you can find guys there. That's what I would be doing. Emmanuel Terry is probably a decent example. I don't know what his ceiling is as somebody who can't really shoot too much, but players like that is definitely who I would be targeting. But let's move on here, last segment, and talk a little bit about just the NBA. It was a crazy day again. We had a crazy Wednesday. We had a even maybe crazier Thursday, just in the total amount of deals that happened. And the top of the East just keeps getting crazier. But before we do that, I want to tell you guys really quickly about the best new way to access our show. So we love the support we get on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you're, whatever app you're using to access our show here, whether Bright Side of the Sun. We love all of you guys. But if you have a smart speaker, you can check out our show that way too. So whether that's an Amazon Echo or Google Home, just tell your speaker to play podcast Locked On Phoenix Suns. It's as simple as that. It'll queue up the most recent episode. Here are our thoughts on Lonzo Ball before we thought that was going to happen, or whatever you want to do. Tell the speaker to play podcast Locked On Phoenix Suns and check out our show on your smart speaker. Alrighty. What was the most surprising deal to you? Let's just start there. What was the most surprising trade that went down today?
I think for me, it was the Marc Gasol deal. That came out of nowhere. I didn't think, from last night, we were hearing all indications where he's a Charlotte Hornet by this time tomorrow morning, and it didn't happen. He actually ended up in Toronto. And I think it was a direct move from Milwaukee today, also in the Cole Mirotic, who we'll hit on in a little bit as well. But the Marc Gasol trade to me was really confusing. I think you're swapping Jonas Valanciunas for Marc Gasol, which is a big upgrade. But I feel like you're kind of going all in on this year. But if you don't get it, I feel like, I don't know if Marc Gasol is that little push of the arrow that gets you over teams like Milwaukee, Boston on a hot night, Philadelphia now at that big four. What do you think?
Yeah, I would have thought that if this player wasn't out there, but I would have just thought that the Raptors kind of went in the opposite direction of what I think would have made them more of a fearsome opponent in the playoffs, which is to get even smaller, even more versatile. This was kind of the other direction. I mean, Valanciunas was already there, so if you just think Gasol's kind of taking his minutes and his role, then not too big of a difference there. But if I was going to get rid of Valanciunas, give up a player like DeLon Wright, who I even thought of as a potential fit here off the bench or as a part of a rotation in the Suns' backcourt, he's just a good young player. It's the cost of switching from Valanciunas to Gasol, and I'm just not sure what amount of upgrade you're really getting there, because Gasol is still not going to be able to play against the small teams. You know, he's not going to be able to play against the Warriors if the Raptors make the playoffs and in crunch time. He's not even going to be able to play against somebody like Al Horford, or if the Bucks go to, now, like you just said, they can play a Mirotic, Giannis 4-5, and Gasol's not going to be able to get on the court there. So the starting lineup they've had in Toronto most of the year with Ibaka at the 5, that's going to be what they still close with in my mind. So it was a little bit peculiar, but my most surprising one, I honestly think is a little bit more close to the Suns. Maybe that's why, maybe I've just had my mind on it so much more, but Markelle Fultz, did you think he'd get dealt today?
Yeah, that was surprising. I did not think he would, because he still,
felt like we were out on that.
Yeah. I feel like honestly, I feel like the Suns were never interested, because for that price as well, yeah, which is a protected first round pick, the Suns could easily gotten that early second round pick as well. I think the Suns could offer some like 2019 second round pick and the Milwaukee pick plus some like Dragan Bender. I think that could have been pretty equal to what the Magic received or sent to Philadelphia, because Jonathan Simmons, if you watch some Magic basketball this year, I know a lot of you probably haven't. I mean, from what I've seen, he's looked pretty washed up, like Trevor Ariza did earlier this season. So I don't know how much he's going to contribute in Philadelphia. So former number one pick about 18 months ago for that little price, I mean, good on Orlando.
Yeah, it's good. And I think Woj was saying in the little Twitter live stream that they were doing, I don't know if anyone else caught it, it was kind of a random little
setup they had. Yeah.
He was talking about how Steve Clifford was an assistant on Brett Brown's dad's coaching staff or something like that. So that connection might have played a part. And I think Steve Clifford is, everybody seems to think he's an incredible coach and disciplined, very like, you know, down to the basics type of guy, and the lack of spotlight in Orlando. I think that's a good landing spot for Fultz. And I was just surprised that it happened, because it seems like that deal could have happened a long time ago. I mean, it's not like Orlando's been holding on to Jonathan Simmons for any particular reason. They used a first round pick that was pretty much an extra pick, not anything super valuable, not their own pick. So that was it just kind of came out of nowhere to me, because I had kind of closed the door on Fultz getting dealt this year. But was there anything else maybe that impacted the Suns or impacted the landscape of the league for another young team or anything like that that you felt like was intriguing or surprising today?
As far as young teams, I don't really think so. I think the one I really wanted to hit on, though, was I think the biggest one today as far as title hopes for any team in the Eastern Conference, not Nikola Mirotic to Milwaukee. I know it's a steep price, 4 second-round picks, but, man, you can't dream of a better combination next to Giannis than Nikola Mirotic and Brook Lopez. And now Giannis can have even more floor spacing for himself. He can now average, I think, over 30 points per game the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm going to be fascinated to see how much they really envision Mirotic as part of their team. I mean, he's clearly an upgrade over Ersan Ilyasova, probably an upgrade over DJ Wilson, who was a young guy playing for them quite a bit. But is the upgrade really that much? I mean, I feel like I'm the only one that's not super, super high on the deal. I really like it because they didn't have to give up too much. Only two of those second round picks are really worth anything. But I don't know. I mean, if he's just kind of a backup big for them, somebody who's going to play 25 minutes in the playoffs, I don't know if that's really raising their ceiling. It's just a little bit better shooting for a team that already is a good shooting team.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like they could roll like a jumbo lineup where Giannis at the three, or Mirotic at the three, Giannis at the four, Lopez at the five. But the more
I think that might be what they start. I think that's if they can make that work, I'm a little bit more excited about it. But if it's like you can only have Lopez or Mirotic on the court, then that makes me just a little bit less high on it, because now you're just kind of breaking into what was already working a little bit.
If you're thinking about from a playoff perspective too, where everything matters in fine detail, I mean, that's a turnstile combination, the front court of Mirotic and Lopez.
Exactly. And Giannis is already going to have to be incredible on defense for this to work. And I think that's why they have guys like Bledsoe and Middleton in the backcourt as well, to defend a little better at the point of attack, and then have Giannis on the back line to rotate over and play some help defense and block a bunch of shots. But hold on. But I like the deal overall. I think it's exciting because they didn't have to give up too much. But the only other one I would mention here as something that kind of goes back to the Wayne Ellington situation, and I promise it'll be the last time I harp on it, but just a couple of other deals today that went down that showed the value that teams can get for taking back money. The Pacers, from your hometown, got a second round pick for getting Nick Stauskas and Wade Baldwin from the Rockets, because they wanted to get not under the luxury tax completely, but save some money there. The Raptors did the same thing, sending a second round pick to the Nets along with Greg Monroe to save a little bit of money there. So again, there's just a precedent for teams getting something back for saving another team money. So that Wayne Ellington situation just continues to be a little bit confusing. But like I said, it's not life or death here. That's not going to be the difference between the Suns winning a championship and not. It's just a little bit puzzling.
I'm kind of glad you brought that up, though, because the more I do think about it, I mean, there's an open roster spot. Are you surprised they didn't take on one of those deals to just fill that last roster spot?
Like, just do another one of these deals?
Yeah, like, for example, the Greg Monroe and second-round pick deal for pretty much nothing, just to fill that last spot.
Yeah, I don't know if they – yeah, because he's on a minimum deal anyway, so potentially. Yeah, I think that they – could have and should have gotten involved in some more stuff, but that's just never really been Robert Sarver's MO. You know, he's not going to spend more money just to get a second or something like that. Some owners are willing to do that. Some GMs have the freedom to wheel and deal like that and kind of add up assets on the back end. Suns general managers have just not really had that green light. So for better or worse, I think that's pretty much just not going to happen for the foreseeable future to see them pull off a deal like that. But that doesn't mean that it's okay that they didn't. I think it's just kind of what we have to assume is the case.
Yeah, pivoting back here, I wanted to ask you this about Toronto, because I just find this really interesting with the Gasol situation with Kawhi and also Lowry. what if Kawhi does go to the Clippers, and what if Marcus Gasol does decline his player option, which I think he will, because I don't know if he wants to stay in Toronto. Do you think that they make Kyle Lowry? I mean, obviously he is available. I mean, they shopped him in the Mike Conley talks. Do you think he is a guy, if we're looking ahead to the summer really quickly again, if he makes sense that if Kawhi does leave and they open up talks even more for a guy like Lowry, do you think he makes sense here for a one-year stopgap?
Potentially. I mean, I think I would, if I'm doing that, I would want to know that he's going to actually stick around. I mean, I don't know. On a couple extra year deal, you see a lot of young teams do stuff like that. Paul Millsap in Denver comes to mind. David West in Indiana, just a veteran to kind of finish off the roster a little bit. That wouldn't necessarily be a problem in my eyes. I would actually want him for longer than just that one last season, though, if I was going to make a trade for him. That deal, if you think about it from that perspective, though, as my kind of last thought here on that is, if Gasol does opt out, if he doesn't want to stick around in Toronto, especially if he kind of reads the tea leaves that Kawhi's leaving and they're going to be in for a rebuild, and they get the Kawhi cap hold off their books, then they're going to actually shed a lot of money, because Valanciunas and CJ Miles were under contract for next year. So yeah, I saw the
spots, by the way.
What'd you say?
If Kawhi and Gasol leave and they trade Kyle Lowry, they'll have near two max spots.
Yeah, exactly. So, and they'll probably have pretty decent, they'll probably have close to one, even if they keep Lowry. So that's an interesting part of this. The Dunked On guys were talking about that. I listened to their recap pod here on the way home today, and that was an interesting angle of it. And I hadn't thought about it. To clear money and get a slight upgrade, that makes it a little bit different, especially if all you have to give up is DeLon Wright.
Yeah, it is really interesting how the landscape is changing. And if we're imagining how today went, Brent, how crazy do you think July is going to be?
Oh, it's going to be bananas, especially considering, as everyone already knows, Anthony Davis didn't get traded today. So that just means we have the next 5 months of rumors to irritate us even more between these petty teams and agents. So it'll keep going on. It'll get even crazier, because a lot of players are going to change teams here this summer. But really quick, I think we can end on this. Who's your favorite in the East right now?
Oh, that's a good one. I'm marking out Boston, surprised to some people. I think they're a fourth out of, if we're naming the top four teams, I think they're four. If we're going off to three, oh man, this is really tough. Three might be Toronto, because I don't know if that is just a lateral move to me with Gasol, but it could pay off really big if he's playing like prime Marcus Gasol at age 34. But number two, I think I really like the Nikola Mirotic signing, if it pays off spacing-wise and scoring-wise. If he plays like he has the last few years in New Orleans, he's a really good fit with Giannis and especially Brooke Lopez. So I'll put the number two. And number one, I'm actually going to go Philadelphia. I think the Tobias Harris trade with Jimmy Butler, I think they're going to form a really good pairing. Interest to see how Ben Simmons is integrated with Tobias Harris also as well. But I feel like if you add in that kind of elite talent, I know people are going to say Tobias Harris an elite talent, but I feel like he's a guy who's really improved and he fits perfectly what Philadelphia needs. And that big four, if they keep it around, it's going to be really scary for the next 3 or 4 years.
Oh, I think Suns fans know Tobias Harris is elite. He's smoked the Suns twice this year already, so we've seen that firsthand. But I'm not quite as high on the Sixers thing, but I would actually put the Bucks fourth. I think I just want to see it, you know? That's all it is. I want to see Giannis in the playoffs, deep into the playoffs. We've never seen that before. I want to see Bledsoe. He's never played in the playoffs except for last season in that first round. I just want to kind of watch it happen. They could prove me wrong, but I just don't necessarily trust it yet. Same with Boston, to be honest. They've had so many problems. They've been so inconsistent. So I'll have them third. And then second, I'll put the Sixers, which I think is kind of, we're splitting hairs here. All these teams are awesome. The East playoffs are going to be so fun, but unless they can get a bunch of difference makers in the buyout market, the Sixers are going to be pretty thin. And then number one, that leaves Toronto. I don't think it's because of the Gasol deal. I just think their team's already been so good this year. And Kawhi is just a killer. Like Kawhi fully healthy, if they can get him through the season healthy, that guy is deadly on both ends. And I'm really excited to see him back in peak form in the playoffs. We haven't seen it in 3 years now, so it'll be fun. But yeah, I mean, not really pertaining to the Suns here because they were so quiet, but it's still an exciting day.
Oh, definitely. And I don't know if it's a hot take or not, but I feel like the top four in the Eastern Conference, I'm making fun of the Eastern Conference the last year or two about, oh, this the talent and balance over here. But I think the top four seeds in the East are more talented up and down than maybe the top four seeds in the West, because I think it's close, at least. There's a debate about that.
Yeah, it is, especially the top. I mean, the West is still deeper. They have 15 teams that would be probably in the playoff run in the East, but the very top four teams, I think the East is probably more talented right now.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's going to be, if this is any indication how February went for the trade deadline, July is going to be even crazier. And how we know with the Tyler Johns situation, it seems like they are preparing for a big time trade this summer. So stay tuned to that. Enjoy the trade deadline coverage today. As always, we'll be back with you guys tomorrow live from Talk Series.